Hello, would you please state your name, the date, the time, and your location?
Okay, my name is Satoria James. Today is July 18th, 2022, and the time is now 2:57 p.m. Central Standard Time.
And where are you located?
Oh, I'm sorry, I'm located in Clinton, Mississippi.
And do you consent to having this interview recorded, digitally uploaded, and publicly released under a Creative Commons license attribution non-commercial share?
Yes, I do.
Thank you so much. Would you please start by just introducing yourself to anyone who might find themselves listening to this? What would you want them to know about you?
Okay. My name is Satoria James. I am a master's prepared nurse. I am currently working in the Jackson area on an oncology unit. I am the president of Black Nurses Rock Metro Jackson chapter of the Black Nurses Rock Foundation. I think that's all I can think of.
Would you tell me a story about your life during the pandemic?
During the pandemic when it first started, I was working on a geriatric behavioral unit. And so I'm in Mississippi, and when we first heard about it, we had heard about it happening in the northern states. And so it slowly trickled down to Mississippi, but once it did hit the population that I was serving at work, they were had history of dementia and Alzheimer's and stuff like that. So once it started, we had to stop visitations for the patients that we were taking care of, and it really bothered them because they were not able to see their families and their friends on the regular schedule of visits that we had before the pandemic happened. So that bothered me because you can see a decline in their behavior and in their personalities by them not being able to see their loved ones.
Would you say more about how it impacted you to be witnessing that happening?
It was depressing because of the fact that I was still able to go home to my loved ones, and they were there in that unit. The typical length of stay, they arranged anywhere from 1 week up to 6 months, just depending on the treatment that the patient had going on and the response to their treatment. And so dealing with people that have dementia and Alzheimer's, they lose their memory, the short-term part of the memory, but being able to see their loved ones' faces, they still remember their loved one faces. They remember their names, you know, they knew their daughters, their sons, their nieces, their nephews, whoever had taken care of them. So it made me sad because they were sad. And then by me being able to go home, like I said, being able to go home to my loved ones, it was something before the pandemic that I actually took for granted. But once I saw how, you know, in such a short time, everything had changed, in America, those the ones that were stuck in the hospital, they could not see their loved ones. So that familiarity that they had of seeing their loved ones, they had lost that. And even though we were taking care of them, we were per se strangers to them because we were new faces that they were meeting. So they did not have a history of us with us as they had with their loved ones.
What was it like explaining that to the loved ones who wouldn't be able to come? Who was having to do that?
We, as the nurses, we were having to do that, and also the social workers and the activity directors that they were having to explain. But because of their memory loss, they wasn't able to get the gist of it. We did have some patients that came in that did not have dementia and Alzheimer's. They might have had other behavioral or psychological issues going on. So they knew what was going on in the world, but for the ones that had the dementia, they could not get a grasp of what was going on or why they couldn't see their loved ones. They were still able to have phone calls with them, but it's different seeing their faces versus talking to a loved one on the phone. for that population.
What was it like working with patients with dementia and Alzheimer's in a moment where there were so many sort of changing safety precautions?
As far as the changes in the safety precautions, it was okay. I mean, we had to wear a mask, and they didn't understand why we had to wear a mask. We had to separate the patients, because before they would congregate in a room, in a general population room, where we called it the day room, where we did our activities, watch TV and stuff like that. So they didn't understand why they couldn't go in the day room. They couldn't go. They didn't understand why they couldn't, you know what I'm saying, watch TV, why they couldn't play the games and do the activities that we usually do. And like, when we had the mask on, we would try to explain, you know, why we got the mask on, but they just couldn't grasp it.
Do you remember when you first heard about COVID-19?
Yes, the first thing that I had heard about it was, I can't remember what state it was, but I know someone had contracted it in a northern state. They say they had got it. They had flown across the country somewhere, and they were like at a hospital, but they was doing okay. That was my first memory of hearing about COVID.
And what were some of your early reactions?
When I first heard about it, I really didn't think it was as serious as it turned out to be. Not to say that the media downplayed it, but just because they had contracted this virus, and they were doing okay, you know, I was just like, oh, okay, well, somebody caught this virus, they're doing fine. You know, the world still goes on.
I'm so curious about what it meant for you to be watching a disease spreading at first in the north and then seeing how it developed as it came further south.
Yeah. Now, yeah. Now, once it started, hitting closer to home, then it, well, not even before it started hitting closer to home, but when you started hearing about more and more people contracting it, and it was spreading very rapidly, then it was like, oh, okay, uh-oh. You know, this is something, you know what I'm saying, something serious that can affect anybody. So, when I had started working, well, I was already working, but like, once, you know, it started becoming more and more popular, some people were wearing masks, but our higher management did not want us to wear masks before fear of scaring the public. And I remember that I did have a coworker who, she had a father that she helped take care of, that had a weakened immune system, and so she was like, well, I'm going to wear my mask anyway. And they was like, well, if you wear a mask, you can't use our mask at the hospital. She said that was fine. She would purchase her own mask and wear them. And then so a couple of days went by, and it was like, well, you can't wear your own mask because of the views that you know, it'll have on the public as far as affecting the public. But at that time, when they started telling us these things, we had already stopped visitations that was at the hospital. So I really couldn't understand why they were saying that, it how it would affect, I guess, the reputation of the hospital, or how the public saw us, if because we worked on a closed unit, so there was no outside population coming in. The visitors, they came in, like, you know, at a on certain days at certain times, but we had already stopped the visitations. So that was kind of a hard thing to have to deal with at work, because of what we was hearing about the disease and what you need to do to protect yourself from the disease, versus your employers telling you, in spite of what you've heard and what you've learned, this is what you need to do.
To the extent that you're comfortable sharing, would you say something about your experiences with health and healthcare infrastructure pre-pandemic?
Pre-pandemic, I worked at a small hospital, and everything ran okay. It ran smoothly. There really wasn't any like glitches in the healthcare system per se. But once the pandemic started, you saw things how quickly things shift. One specific event I remember happening was because of the fact that you needed your PPE when you was going into these patients' rooms, your gloves, your mask, your gowns, and stuff like that. And of course, everything was going in short supply. They started us. They wanted us to start not protecting ourselves with other diseases that were contagious. And I didn't understand that because I'm like, if before the COVID, this other disease, we treated it A, B, C, X, Y, Z. Why are we changing up the way we treat that disease or protecting ourselves in that disease versus protecting ourselves from COVID, just because COVID is here? And that bothered me.
That's really interesting. Could you tell me more about that?
One of the diseases I would remember specifically is MRSA, which is a it's methicillin resistant Staphylococcus aureus, and it is a bacteria that can get in wounds. And how you protect yourself from that is because of the germ. It can get on any object that is in a patient's room in a hospital setting. You have to put on the same PPE minus the mask. You have to wear your gown, you have to wear your gloves, and when entering that patient's room, because you don't know what is contaminated in the room, and you don't want to get that bacteria or germ on you, and then you transfer it to other patients that you're taking care of, or your coworkers or your family for that matter. But once the COVID virus became more prevalent, they wanted us to stop wearing our PPE for the MRSA bacteria and just treat it like it was just a normal disease. But mind you, just because the COVID did, the COVID was going on, MRSA still had the same. It's I'm trying to see how to say this. It still had the same bacteria and germs that were just as effective and infectious then as it does during the time of the COVID. And I didn't feel that you needed to protect yourself no different then before the COVID versus while COVID is going on.
Did your employer give any kind of explanation for that?
No.
How did that shift make you feel?
It made me upset because of the simple fact that I feel that I should protect myself as well as protect the other patients that I'm taking care of, no different than how I would have done it on any other day.
Thinking about the world before the pandemic, what was your day-to-day looking like?
Before the pandemic, day-to-day routine consisted of going to work, taking care of my patients, helping coworkers, coming home. On a typical off day, I would run my errands, do shopping, pay bills, or spend time with my family, celebrating birthdays. Sometimes we would get together and just have like a little family day, a little outing where we might go out to eat or we might go to the movies or something like that. Versus once the pandemic started, all of that stopped completely, aside from having to go to work. Still had to go to work, still had to do shopping, but it was only for necessities, and it wasn't as frequently as it was before. I wasn't able to see my family anymore. We would talk on the phone, we would text on the phone, and then we would do like video chats, like group video chats for whoever could, get in on the chat, just so we can all just have that sense of togetherness. We will have that.
Do you remember one of the celebrations of birthdays that happened before the pandemic and what that looked like?
Yes, I do. It was actually my cousin's birthday. She had turned 45, and It was a tough year for us because she was a twin, and her twin had died the previous year. So this was, her first year without her twin, our first year, of a birthday without them. So I decided to give her a party, just to kind of cheer her up some. And so I had it was a surprise party, so I had told all my family about it. We had all, just pitched in on what everybody was bringing, brought her to the house, and she was happy to say the least, and surprised that we was able to do that for her.
And what did birthday celebrations look like in 2020 after the pandemic hit?
It really wasn't a celebration. It was just like a regular day. Since the pandemic started, I just started spending time with my family last year. So it's like we went almost 2 years without being able to congregate together.
What were your clients' day-to-day lives looking like pre-pandemic?
Some of the patients that I took care of.
Yeah.
You said pre-pandemic?
Yes.
Okay. Well, the most of the population that we serve, they came from either long-term care facilities, or they lived at home with their families, or they lived in their apartments and stuff like that. So when you're in a long-term care facility, you have the other residents that live there also that, they was able to congregate with and be able to see their families as always. Post-pandemic, once the clients Or well, once the patients discharged from our facility and they were going back to their long-term care facilities, because of the COVID and to trying to decrease the spread of it, our patients will leave our facility and go to their long-term care resident, but they will have to go on a closed unit for a isolation period of 2 weeks to ensure that they don't have the COVID and they won't be spreading it to the other clients there. I know some of the residents, of course, they had stopped visitation at the long-term care facility. So what they had started doing was just allowing them to do FaceTime with their family members. So I know that made them sad. I have had some of the patients that we took care of, say, well, hey, I haven't seen my daughter in 3 months. I haven't seen my sister in 6 months. They had missed holidays with their families, or they had loved ones that had passed and they were not able to go to the funerals, and they were not able to grieve with their families.
Did you notice any ways that all of that was impacting the sort of just experience and wellness of your patients?
Yes, they were not as happy and as cheerful as they usually be. It was kind of like it was a gloom over the facility while all of this was going on.
I'd love to hear what you noticed about what was going on in Mississippi more generally during the pandemic. What did the response from the state look like?
As far as the response from the state and the well-being of the citizens of Mississippi, I don't believe that the response was good. I think the guidelines that were set into place, that was told to everyone of how to take care of themselves and how to protect themselves was not taken as serious in Mississippi.
Do you have a sense of why that was?
What I can attribute it to, a lot of people were upset because they had to wear masks.
How did you feel about mask wearing?
I don't mind it because of the simple fact that it is You're protecting yourself, you're protecting the people that you come in contact with, and you are protecting your loved ones. But some people felt that their rights were being violated just because they were asked to put on a mask.
I'd love to hear. Oh, sorry, please continue.
Okay, and I was just saying that I don't feel that's fair because, in my perspective, it's like, okay, if you don't care enough to protect yourself, care enough to protect the next person, care enough to protect your son, your daughter, your sister, your brother, your mother, or your father.
How are you? You had mentioned sort of keeping in touch with family over the phone. How are you feeling about your family over this period of time and their safety?
I was worried about them. I miss them. I have another cousin. She is in healthcare, and we're very close. So of course, where the unit that I was working on, it was a closed unit, and like we tested our patients before we came, before they were admitted to our unit to make sure they didn't have COVID. So I kind of feel protected there. But she worked on a general med surge floor where COVID was more prevalent. So I was worried about her safety as far as her contracting it. My aunts, they and my mother, they're retired, so they were not like, going, they didn't have to go out into the public.
What was access to things like testing like?
For me, the access was okay because of the close unit that I worked on. We had to get tested every 2 weeks to make sure that we didn't have it. However, I do know that I've had some friends that, was not as privileged as I was to have access to it, but they was trying to get they had different checkpoints, if you want to say, set up where you can go to get tested, and they would talk about how long the lines were to get tested or how long they had to stay in line to be able to get tested. And once you got tested, you had to wait 2 or 3 days before you got your results back.
Were you or other staff helping patients with dementia do tests?
No, I didn't. Well, sometimes we did test the patients, but I did test my coworkers.
What was that like?
At first it was weird. It was scary, but then after we have done it for months on end, it became normalized. A lot of people, it's very uncomfortable. So a lot of people didn't like it, the way that they made it feel. But after a while, they'll come to me, "Hey, Satorius, time for me to take my tests." And it's just it just became normalized. It was something to do, and then you go back to your regular routine.
I'm curious. Yeah. 2020 had so much going on that wasn't just the pandemic. What were some of the other issues kind of taking up space in your mind and heart?
One of the things that bothered me was that was my son's, that was his senior year. So he wasn't able to do prom, wasn't able to do graduation, like all the things that seniors kind of like live for. It's like you go through school this whole time and you're like, okay, your senior year, you have all these activities and stuff that the school has planned. You have activities plans with your friends, you have trips and everything planned. He wasn't able to do that. And so I know that affected him because he didn't, once the spring break had came in March, they didn't go back to school after that. So I kind of felt like he got cheated out of some of the activities that seniors normally get to participate in.
What was it like for you watching him go through that?
I was sad, I was hurt, and I felt helpless because there was nothing that I could do about it. But one of the things that I was able to do, although I wasn't able to like get senior portraits taken for him, I did. I purchased a camera and we went out and took pictures.
How did he take to the online schooling that he had to transition to? What was that like?
It was tough on him because the only time he had done a couple of online classes was during the summer. They would have class that would be like 8 weeks long. He would take those, but having to go from go but having to go 100% online, it was some adjusting that he had to get used to because he was used to the traditional going to school, having the teacher to explain the things that he didn't understand during the lesson. And it was hard for me because of the way that the way children are taught now has changed significantly from how I was taught. And so I was not able to help him with the lesson. So then again, I felt helpless. I remember one time he had some math work that he had to do, and I'm not a mathematician, but I do like math. And so I know the problem that he had, I knew how to get to the answer, but the way that they was teaching him was, I was like a deer caught in the headlights. I was totally lost with it. So my solution was, I'm gonna do the problem that I know, the way I know how to do it. You do the problem the way you know how to do it, and if we come up with the same answer, we're gonna say you're right. And I don't know if that was the best solution for it, but that was all that I could come up with at the time.
What was it like talking to your son about the pandemic?
It was okay. He is a very educated young man, so he was watching things that was going on the news the same time that I was going, you know what I'm saying, the same time that I was watching it. So he was understanding of what was going on, and he knew why he couldn't do certain things or why things, you know what I'm saying, were the way they were. But and he tried to be strong about it, but I still felt like with the activities and stuff like that, he was kind of saddened about the way that it was affecting the end of his school year, of his high school years, rather.
How did your social relationship change during the pandemic?
I wasn't able to see my coworkers or my friends. I couldn't see my coworkers outside of work, and I couldn't see my friends because sometimes we would like get together and have get together for lunch like twice a month or something like that. So what we would do, we just increased on the phone calls. I really wasn't big on video chatting before the pandemic, but we started video chatting more.
Tell me about not being so interested in video chatting before and then moving to it during the pandemic.
It wasn't nothing that I was against, but I wouldn't say that I'm old school, but it was just something that I wasn't used to. So when I'm calling somebody, I'm calling you and I'm putting the phone to my ear and we're having just a verbal conversation. That's like what I grew up on. That was all I knew. So that was my norm. So now it's like, okay, well, you do your video chat. Then I was like, okay, you have to worry about, I guess, I don't even know if there's a video chat etiquette as to say, do you like text this person and say, hey, are you busy? Can I video chat you? Or, you know what I'm saying? Stuff like this. So I don't know what the rules and regulations of that are versus me just picking up the phone and calling somebody and they just, they're able to pick up the phone or they decline the call. So I'm still kind of getting, still got kind of getting used to it because I feel like when you video chat, if you don't let that person know that you're getting ready to video chat them, you don't know what they have going on, and you're kind of intruding on them.
Have you started to see people face to face yet?
Yes, I have.
What did it look like when you started to do that again?
I just started, and it's been kind of okay. I've gone to couple of dinners, a couple of lunches, and then I still feel in the back of my mind, I still feel kind of scared because, okay, you're in the restaurant and of course you have to take your mask off so you can eat, but
start paying attention to like
how close people are as far as the vicinity of where they're sitting, not with the party that you're with, but like the next party, and how close people stand to, saying one another. I pay more attention to that. If someone is coughing constantly or sneezing constantly, they're kind of in the back of my mind, I'm like, oh, do they have the coronavirus? So I was, even though I was out starting to socialize, I was still nervous.
I'm curious, what does the word health mean to you?
Health. Typically, when I think about health, I think about someone being in good health. But I mean, you can be in poor health, you can be in bad health. It comes in different varieties. But when I think about it, I just think about someone being in good physical and mental health.
What are some of the things you want for your own health?
For my own health, I would like to be able to right now I work in exercise, so I would like to be able to continue that and to live a healthier lifestyle so that I can live longer.
What does the word safety mean to you?
Safety means being able to relax. Being if you're in a place, you kind of let your guard down, so to speak, and you are comfortable in your surroundings.
I know you mentioned a bunch of these already, but just in case there's anything else. In that sort of tiny confines of safety for related to COVID, what are some of the things you were doing to keep yourself safer?
I wasn't going anywhere. I did have to go to, like I said, I had to go to the grocery store. But what I started doing was I would go closer to closing time when it was less populated. I tried a couple of times going early in the morning when it first opened, but I learned quickly that that was a no-no because everybody was at the grocery store as soon as it opened. So I would go closer to closing time, and even though it was less populated, but of course, all the shelves were, if they weren't wiped clean, the selections were very few of what you can pick because they were not getting in enough supplies. And of the supplies that they did have in, I waited to the end of the day. So I've missed out on, a greater selection of things. And then going back to safety, getting gas. I know I had heard of a story out of state where a nurse had, she was beaten up at the gas pump because she had on her scrubs and she was getting gas, but she was the victim and the perpetrator was like, "Well, you're out here risking our lives because you're out, in the public getting gas." And that made me scared because of the simple fact that I work in healthcare and I would have to, get gas in my vehicle. So I was nervous about doing that. And I didn't want that same thing to happen to me.
That's terrifying.
Is. It is, and it's sad because of the simple fact that we're putting our own lives at risk, going in and taking care of these patients. But, we put that fear aside because we took an oath to do a certain job, but then we're being victimized for, for taking care of people that, that have the disease. Well, not the disease, but, that have the virus.
Did you feel valued as a healthcare worker during this period of time?
Oh, yeah, I did. Before maybe not so much. But after that, it seemed like, not to say if people were not appreciative of what you did, they were more verbalized with their appreciation after the pandemic happened.
Would you tell me a story
Yes.
about a conversation that where someone showed that appreciation to you?
I had a patient that I was taking care of, had been taking care of them for about 2 weeks, and I had taken care of this patient before, and so it, like before the pandemic had happened, then they were readmitted to the hospital. So we had developed a rapport. We would sit down and talk and stuff like that. And so she would just tell me, "Oh, I thank y'all for what y'all do. I thank you for what you do." She's like, "I thank you for taking the time to sit and talk with me, because during the pandemic she was not able to see her family and stuff like that." So because that, I've known her before the pandemic. We had become friends and stuff. So she appreciated me doing that, and then she actually nominated me for the Daisy Award. That's an award that nurses get for just doing, not gonna say the normal, just kind of like going above and beyond what the expected is for patients.
That's really beautiful.
Yes.
What did you notice? So for the patients who are confined to their room, what did they do with their days?
We would what we started doing was just buying like individual activities, books, magazines. Some of them they would like to like do the color by number. So we started doing things like that that they can actually do individualized in their rooms.
How are you feeling about the immediate future?
The immediate future, I am hopeful. I wish that people would start wearing their masks more often now, because of the fact that the numbers are starting to increase. And not to say that we go back to how things were during the height of the pandemic, but I just wish that they would go back to start doing the 6 feet apart, washing your hands, and wearing your mask, so we can get these numbers back down.
How have the policies inside of where you work adopted to these sort of different changes?
During the height of the pandemic, of course, we had stopped visitations altogether. And then once they did start back having the visitations, they were allowed like 2 visitors a day. No overnight guests. You would only be able to have those 2 visitors all day for that period. And it had to be one at a time in the room. So if the visiting hours was from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., however long that one visitor stayed, the next visitor came after that first visitor left and stayed the remainder of that time. So the then it has fast forwarded to whereas now you can have an overnight guest. You can still now you can have 4 visitors, and they can all be in your room at the same time. Now, and then like if someone is terminally ill, they can have like a unlimited amount of visitors.
What was it like first witnessing patients being able to see family members again? So when things just started opening up.
Oh, it was it was a joy. It was a delight, because you was able to see the patient's faces light up when they saw a face that was familiar to them. And so, I mean, I was just overjoyed that they were able to. I feel like they was, kind of having like, okay, this is somebody I know, this is somebody I'm familiar with. They are truly like happy in this moment. So it made me happy that they were happy.
How did you decide to become a nurse?
I became a nurse because when I was younger, my mom, she was diagnosed with cancer. And I remember going to visit her in the hospital. I was young. I didn't understand what was, the severity of her disease, but I do remember the nurses, coming in, helping her, even to have to get up and walk and stuff like that, because I was used to seeing my mom, being strong, the superwoman, doing any and everything. But then to see her at her weakest point, and she needed help walking, and those nurses was coming in to help her walk, help her get dressed, help bathe her. I knew I wanted to have that type of impact on someone else.
What are some of your hopes for a longer-term future?
The hopes for the long-term future. I hope that this coronavirus goes away completely, so that we can go back to, I guess, a world of normalcy or pre-pandemic. I hope that happens, and then I hope that we find a cure for cancer. They have drugs that can help, decrease the growth of tumors, decrease the spread of the cancer, but I want something that would just eliminate it, and hopefully cancer would be eradicated.
What do you think would need to change and happen so that we could find a cure for cancer?
There needs to be more funds donated towards the research of cancer, towards the research of the drugs that are used to treat cancer.
Who's been supportive of you during the pandemic?
Everyone that I know, my family, my friends, everyone.
Would you tell me a story about a moment where a family member or a friend was supportive of you?
Okay. I have a friend. I really like to call her my sister because we have been knowing each other for over 20 years, and she works in the healthcare field. Also, she works in a clinic setting versus me working in a hospital setting. And we would talk on the phone. And I remember one day specifically that, I had just kind of broke down to her, telling her about the, things that were going on at work. And she just gave me some encouraging words. She lifted me up and, just told me not to give up, that we're going to get through this and things are going to get better.
Are things feeling better?
Yes, they are.
And what are some of the ways that you've been taking care of yourself?
I've started taking more vitamins to kind of ward off to help and to strengthen my immune system so that I would be able to fight off the coronavirus if I became in contact with it. Like I say, I wasn't going to the gym, but I started going to the gym last year to help just to get into better shape, so that I won't have no comorbidities that, if I did catch the coronavirus, that it would be more severe on
What did it feel like when you first
me.
went into the gym?
It was it, I was nervous because of, just being out in public. I wasn't sure of how many people are going to be there. The local gym that I do that I have joined, they have an app, so you can actually see its peak times of when it's crowded. And it's typically crowded like in the evening time when people get off of work and stuff like that. So I go early in the morning where it's not a lot of people there. It is a 24-hour gym. If I don't go early in the morning, I'll go late at night when it's like almost empty.
That's so interesting. Did these kinds of changes affect your sort of like sleep schedule?
It does. Now, when I do go late at night, it's typically like when I am off the next day, so I am able to sleep in later. But when I do go early in the morning, it usually doesn't bother me because I get up like at about 5 or 6 o'clock every morning anyway. So what I would just start doing, I just start just going to the gym.
How did the pandemic impact the work that you are doing with Black Nurses Rock?
It impacted it tremendously to the fact that before the pandemic, we were able to do events for the community. We were able to have our face-to-face monthly meetings that our local chapter had. So once the pandemic started, we stopped the face-to-face meetings and we started doing phone conferences, and we alternate those with virtual meetings just so we can have that interaction that we were missing outside of that outside of the face-to-face meetings. And then as far as it affecting the community, we have done different things for nursing homes. We would donate stuff to the homeless. We would host events for the community, like health fairs and stuff like that. So we had to stop doing those all together. Now, once they came out with the vaccines, we were able to participate in several COVID vaccination programs that was going on. So we were slowly able to get back in the community and do things.
When you were doing your phone conferences and virtual conferences, what are some of the things you noticed about the nurses that you were supporting and working with through the organization?
Well, as far as the phone conferences go, they are okay because we still do those, but they just kind of feel more impersonable. When we was doing the face-to-face ones, it's like we could kind of feed off each other. As far as whatever the topic was we were discussing. And so by us not having that, it kind of just, I guess it made the meetings less personable. And then also I would like to see my cohorts, because a lot of the nurses that are in our chapter, we don't work together, but because nursing is our it is a thing we have in common. We've developed a bond, so it's like when we have these meetings, you're excited because you get to see your other cohorts that we don't typically see outside of having the meeting or doing something for the community.
Could you explain a bit about the importance of having an organization like Black Nurses Rock at this moment?
I think it is important to have because, true enough, we are nurses, but we are only providing our skills to the population that we serve through our employer. Being a nonprofit organization that is community-based, we're able to get out and see some of those faces, a lot of the faces that we would not normally see if we were not in the hospital setting.
You'd mentioned things changing a bit after vaccinations came out. What was access to vaccines like where you were?
Our job offered the vaccines to the employers. We did have it was very few clinics that were giving them out, and now the health departments, they were giving them out where they had these little drive-throughs that a lot of states had, and the lines to get those were just as long as the lines that were available to get tested. But when we had these the vaccination drives, we had them at different locations in the area. They were sponsored by local churches. They were sponsored by Miss Mississippi. She had one day. So the kid, well, not the kids, but the parents that wanted to come and get the vaccine, they were able to come. And then they was also still able to bring their kids, because even though it was the COVID vaccine drive, we still had other benefits that the kids could partake in. And one event that I presented, we was doing like blood pressure screenings, we was doing health education. They had a dentist booth set up where the kids can go learn about oral health. They had another table set up where they was giving out supplies and stuff like that, sanitizer, wipes. They was giving out the little individual sanitizers to the public.
It sounds like there was a lot of awareness that even as COVID was changing, all of these other health needs kept happening.
Yes. It did. And then that's the thing, just because COVID started and happened and it was at the top of the chain, everything else did not stop just because COVID happened. You still had to be aware of other things that could be going on with your health.
What do you think people in the humanities and the social sciences could be helping us do to understand this moment? So, people studying literature or film or sociology, what can we do?
I think if doing things like this, doing other documentaries and making it open for the public to see so they can understand just how real it is, because of the simple fact that when COVID was going on, everybody was isolated. You were in your home, and you didn't know what was going on. You know what I'm saying? You didn't understand how things were affecting the rest of the world or everyone else that was in the world. So doing things like this and making it open to the public, they can get other people's point of view or perspective of how it was affecting them, so they can understand the seriousness and the severity of it. Because even though we are, I guess we're not post-COVID, but we're kind of like on the downhill slide. Some people still believe that COVID isn't real, and it was a hoax.
What's it been like to hear about people who thought COVID was a hoax or still think it's a hoax?
I don't understand it, because I've my thing is, if you think it was a hoax, you think it's fake. Explain how all these people died.
What are
And no
some
one, oh, go
Oh,
ahead.
no, please, please.
Oh, I'll say, and I mean, there's no way that you can explain it, regardless of how it got here, who brought it here, or what brought it here. It is here. It has affected everyone in the world in some form of fashion. So there is no way that people cannot say that it's not real.
Where are some of the places you were getting your information about COVID from?
I was getting it from my cohorts. I was speaking with doctors that was like on the health board for the state of Mississippi, and I was also watching the different news or watching the different broadcasts that Dr. Fauci did.
How did you feel about the news coverage? And how did the news coverage make you feel?
I felt that it was good news coverage. I was, as far as the information goes, I was excited for it, because it was giving us some insight of the seriousness of it, the things you can do to protect yourself. But as I was seeing, how they were going around and doing the interviews at the different hospitals and stuff like that, it made me very sad and depressed.
Thinking about your own education, what were some of the things in history that you wish you'd learned more about younger?
There isn't anything I can just think of right offhand.
I'd like you to imagine speaking to some historian in the future, someone far enough away that they didn't live through this, and have no lived experience of this moment. What would you want them to remember? What would you want them to be sure that as they go forth with whatever their research question is, what would you want them to, at the very least, keep in the back of their mind?
When they're doing their interviews, regardless of what their views are on whatever topic that they are covering, whoever they are interviewing, just be empathetic to that person and how that situation affected them.
What are some of the ways that you've learned about empathy?
The ways that I've learned about empathy, I believe I have always just been a empathetic person, because of the, I think that's just the type of person that I am. I've when I hear things that that is going on with someone, it saddens me because I, for one, whatever the situation is, I can't imagine myself in those shoes, and I can only imagine, you know, saying how it is affecting that person. So what I try to do is try to help them see a different side to it. And if they are feeling helpless and hopeless, I just try to give them hope or show them ways that they can overcome the situation that they're going through.
I want to thank you
Thank
so,
you
so much
for
for the generosity of your time and the beauty of your answers and everything you've done. Those are all of the questions I have and know how to ask at the moment, but I'd love to open some space. If there's anything you want to share that my questions haven't made room for, please say so.
No, I don't think so, but I do want to thank you for reaching out to me, for conducting this interview, and I hope that it is helpful to the population, that it reaches. And
I'm
I think
certain it will
that you
be.
are doing a good work.
Thank you so much.
Yes, ma'am.